You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Jim. Lisette is traveling today, so you've got me. Today we're talking about nutrition in relationship. For some reason, I was taken back by a video I had seen recently online that someone had shared, which had all these foods that were sold in the United States that were illegal or banned from being sold in other countries. And I was like, this can't be true. I mean, we've got some of the strictest FDA people, personnel out there, right? All of our food is really thoroughly protected and watched from having chemicals or things put in that shouldn't be there. But in researching this, I was sort of shocked to understand that every country has their own preferences, what they think's safe, what they think's not safe. What one country says is, hey, good and well, and maybe profitable for the businesses. Another country may say, hey, that's no good for the people because studies show that that chemical may produce a problem. And I was thinking to myself, what does that do? How does that have to do with us as human beings? And something that came into view was today's show, which is nutrition in relationship. We want to talk about our gut. What's our gut instinct? What does our gut have to do with it? What are these banned foods? Just a kind of a splattering of them. I'm sure there's many, many others, but here's some. But these are banned foods that are legal in the U.S. and sold in the United States, but not sold in some other countries. And what do studies show us about all of this? Nutrition and how it impacts us, how it impacts us health-wise, maybe disease-wise, sleep, quality of life. Let's get to it. So number one, what does our gut do? And I'm going to start going with our gut. Our gut does a few things for us. Our gut helps supply essential nutrients, right? So it takes the food we're eating and it rips out the nutrients that we need and gets rid of the stuff we don't. It synthesizes vitamin K, something that we have to make, but is very difficult to get naturally. Aids in the digestion of cellulose, so digesting cellular material, cellulose. We'll have to study that a little bit more. Angiogenesis and enteric nerve function, and I'll spell out what that is and what that means and why diet and gut health is important to that. So let's go on to our first thing here. So what is our gut? What people take probiotics, people eat yogurt, people eat fiber, people eat things that are supposed to be good for their gut. They also take things that may be not good for their gut from taking antibiotics, taking other types of medicine, maybe alcohol and other stimulants. You also have smoking. Smoking can affect your gut health as well. We'll look at some of those pieces of information in a second here. So what is the gut? Epithelial cells, laminae propria, and the muscularis mucosae, and we'll spell out what those pieces are in a minute. This is your gut. Your gut made up of your small and large intestine mostly. We'll talk about those. Colonized by 10 to the 14th microbes. That means 10 followed by 14 zeros. We're in the United States that has a 3 followed by 8 zeros. So it would be, let's see, 8 versus 14, it would be 6. It would be 1 million times the population of the United States, little microbes that are in your gut. 10 to the 14th. 10 followed by 14 zeros. I might be off by a little bit of a factor. It might have been 3 million times more the population of the United States, something like that. But it is a huge amount of these little microbes that really are what are responsible for taking our food and giving us the energy, breaking down the nutrients, keeping us healthy. And if our gut's healthy, then we can digest our food. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm doing this. I'm studying it as, quote, the engineer would research something, try to understand it, try to break it down, try to explain it, because to me, it's a very exciting thing. It's like going into space. I don't know what's out there. Well, I don't even know what's in my gut. I don't know if we all know what's in our gut. So again, there's 10 times more foreign microbes, these little bacteria and things in our gut, than human cells. They're not us. They're just a bacteria that lives there. There's 1,000 species of these bacteria, and most of them are unknown species, which I found incredible. So there are some that we really know, and these are the ones like in yogurt you'll see on the back of it, you know, with 8 strains of bacteria. Those bacteria are lifting weights. They're straining all the time. That's what's happening. We're going to actually talk about culture, because everybody's intestinal tract is unique to them. The type of bacteria, the amount, the proportion, have to do with everything from where you're born, where you live, your parents, the food you eat, physically how you were born, how your intestines formed, if certain valves are working correctly, that everything that you touch, from whether you're as an infant breastfed or fed with formula, all these things affect the balance of the bacteria in your gut, and therefore how you begin your life and then continue to grow until you become an adult. These bacteria are so important as part of us. Again, 10 to the 14th, 10 followed by 14 zeros, which kind of makes no sense there, or actually a 1 followed by 14 zeros. 3 million times more than the population of the United States of these little things in your stomach. So just think about that. Let's go to the next slide here. Okay, the epithelial cells are simply the cells that line the outer surfaces of organs. So they're the things that are on the inside and the outside of our large and small intestine, the intestines that go from the stomach all the way out to the other end. The lamina propria, don't even really care what that is other than what it does. It's the loose connective tissue that supports the delicate mucosal epithelium. That is the outer surface. So it supports the outer surface of the inner and outer surface, which is where all the bacteria live and survive. It allows the epithelium to freely move. So when your muscles move and try to get that food to go through your stomach, it all holds together, and it allows the different surfaces to kind of like slip over each other and move. They have some flexibility. And it provides immune defense, meaning if you have certain things that you've digested that are bad, it protects you from a bacteria blood. It's like a bacteria blood barrier by having this immune defense in there. It helps protect you as an organism from stuff that's inside your intestines from interacting with you. So there's some immunity properties there. And then the muscularis mucosae, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, mucosae, is the muscle. We're just muscle. Let's just talk about the muscle of the intestine. The muscle of the gastrointestinal tract. It's outside of, it actually goes all the way from the esophagus to the rectum, and it's the muscle that moves stuff through our system. That is what, if you talk about our gut, it's in our gut. So if you're looking at if you're looking at large and small intestine, which is almost always the opposite, right? The large is the short one, and the long is the large. I'll say that's backwards all the time, right? Large intestine, small intestine. You've got the one that's really long, which is the first one where all this digestion, a lot of the digestion goes, and you've got that big one that's right before the end. So in any case, this is where the bacteria is. This is where it does all its fun stuff. And let's talk about what those things are that's in our gut. We have this stuff we're born with, the microbiota, the bacteria that is a thousand strains that stabilize over time. So from the time we're born to age one, we have a change in that, what's there, what survives. Because the food we eat allows the bacteria. Some bacteria can eat certain foods. Some bacteria can't eat certain food. They can break down some things. They don't break down others. Our chemistries change over time. And by age one, we've got a different chemistry than we had when we were born. The more adult-like, let's call it town, the town of bacteria is more adult-like by the time we hit one, but at when we're born, it's completely different. The composition, oh, there we call it the community. I call it community here. The composition of the gut bacteria community is distinctive. So I want to say we have our own culture. Culture in our stomach, in our intestines, we have our own, is distinctive to us. So there's, we have very unique bacteria makeup in our stomach. Not everyone has the same. It's different wherever we are. It's different what we eat. It's different where we're born. All these things impact it. Okay, so what happens in there? What makes sense? There's physiochemical conditions that deal with the health of us have to do with these things actually go according to plan. The intestinal motion, things being moved in our intestines through the intestines. What is the pH value? Are we highly acidic, highly basic? Are we at a good pH? It will determine what bacteria or are more active and which ones can survive. The redux, reduction condition, reduction in oxidation of foods and different things that are in there. If you have breakdown of your food going on. The nutrients that we're eating, the secretions like the gastric acid, bile, digestive enzymes, and mucus. These are all things that are very unique to us. These are the things that separate us from someone else. That, do we have an intact and functioning ileocecal valve? It's the valve that separates the small and large intestine. It keeps reflux, meaning keeps fluid from going backwards in our system, which it keeps things in check. So is that working correctly? Because if it's not working correctly, there's a little leakage, and then that changes the bacterial composition. And where do we go from there? So what else? We talked about some of the things that the gut was responsible for, synthesizing vitamin K. We spoke about aiding in the digestion of cellulose. And basically, a good gut is responsible for breaking down the food that we need for further processing, rejecting what's not needed, protecting us from disease. So there's a lot of things that if our gut didn't have all these foreign entities, this culture of thousands of strains of bacteria, mostly unknown strains, I guess not named, they don't put them into any category. I guess that what it is, if we didn't have all these, what do we call them, aliens in our belly, we wouldn't survive the way we do. We have to be thankful for them. It's responsible for a lot. Oh, here I brought this up before. I want to talk about angiogenesis. Angiogenesis is new blood vessel formation. So when we need to add more blood vessels, our gut has a responsibility in doing that, forming new blood vessels. And then the enteric nerve function, that's the nerve system that is throughout our body in the digestive system. They call it one of the instinctive. It is one of the innate, we don't have to think about it, types of systems, nerve systems. It connects all these different glands together, the musculatory, the secretory glands, the blood vessels are all connected together through this array of neurons, and they have these chemical synapses that communicate back and forth and let the one thing know what to do. Like as your intestines are pushing the food through, it's part of your intestine health. The synapses transmit from a neuron to a neuron the chemical impulse. Why this is important is there are a lot of things that can affect intestinal health, which then impact us as human beings, our ability to think, our ability to have emotional intelligence, our ability to sleep well, sleep through the night without getting up, having a headache, you know, immune, are we going to be getting sick? May we get sick? There are other diseases that are associated with poor gut health, and we'll talk about that in a minute as well. So, finally, the gut. Supplying essential nutrients is one of its tasks. The production and bioavailability of compounds that protect against, again, production and bioavailability of compounds that protect against cardiovascular diseases, lipid and lipoprotein imbalance, that means high and low, the lipids in your cholesterol, the cholesterol in your bloodstream, the breast, colon, and prostate cancer, osteoporosis, low bone mass, menopausal syndrome, all those can be impacted by, is the gut producing the things correctly from the food it's eating because it has the right balance of bacteria? And there's so many more people out there that know so much more about this. I'm trying to keep it simple for myself, which is that the gut produces and makes available to the body things that protect against these things. A lot of cancers and high and low cholesterol, or should not protect against low cholesterol, but protect against imbalance. These things are ultimately things that are very good for our survival, our health, and our ability to get along with others in society. And we'll talk more about it when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette, who's not here, and Jim. Today we're talking about gut instinct. Well, we were talking about nutrition in relation, and we started off with our gut instinct. Let's continue on. We talked about all the healthy things our gut does for us, all the good things, what it protects us from, how it takes food, breaks it down, and gives us chemicals that we use for just our normal day life, energy, how it helps with the nerve impulses through our body. It provides us with ongoing protection from cancer and other things. What are the things that can moderate and make the gut have problems in doing this? And here are a few. The ability for the gut to perform as it needs to be, as it needs to do, as we want it to, it can be moderated by antibiotics. Because we take antibiotics, it kills the bacteria in our gut. It throws off the balance, the natural balance. Illness can affect the bacteria in our gut, the balance. It can affect the pH. It can affect the environment, which then changes the culture of that soup in our intestinal tract. Aging can also change how quickly the bacteria replenish, what bacteria are there, what is the environment that's in our stomach, the strength of the lining of our stomach. Let's go back into our intestines. The bad dietary habits and lifestyle things that can impact, and we'll talk about drinking and smoking as two of them, perhaps even not sleeping and other things, probably caffeinated drinks and other types of things that we ingest, perhaps even what we eat. Some of the harmful dietary factors are iron, mostly from red meat and fortified cereals. It can change the chemistry of our gut. It brings the iron in. The iron is something that gets involved and can not allow our intestines and the bacteria in there to operate as they normally would. The increased iron availability may increase the proliferation and harmfulness of bad gut bacteria. So it may actually evoke or help bad gut bacteria that is not helpful to us but can create other problems. And I think I bring this up later on. Iron exposure contributed to the colonization of certain bacterial pathogens, including salmonella. So there you go, salmonella and iron. Maybe that's why soup cans gain salmonella. Thinking about that. I need to research that. So iron may be a risk factor, and diet definitely is, for colorectal cancer. So cancers can be impacted by diet, and the diet can impact that stuff in us. What else? We talked about harmful lifestyle factors such as cigarette smoking, which can cause intestinal disorders like Crohn's disease. Changes in intestinal irrigation and microbiome. So again, the smoking can change how our system reacts. It can also increase the permeability of the mucosa, the gut barrier, the things that protect our blood from the bacteria. The smoking can increase the permeability of it, which means permeable means go through. The bacteria can seep through into the blood. There can be some toxicity from that. So smoking can impact how our gut can healthily digest the foods we eat and keep us in a good state of health. It can impair our mucosal immune responses. Again, impairing the ability for us to fight off, say, bad bacteria or something that is a food-related brought-in illness. Let's continue on with that. So more lifestyle impacts on gut health. Alcohol consumption impacts the microbiota in the gastrointestinal tract. Changes in the intestinal microbiota and oxidative stress. So alcohol can change what bacteria live. It can kill some off, and it can actually feed others. The imbalance in intestinal microbiota and inflammation. You can get inflammation in there, which then creates other issues. And the hyperpermeability, which we talked about already with smoking, where you get endotoxemia, which is bacteria entering the bloodstream through the intestinal wall, which then is a problem. It also can create tissue damage and then liver disease. So alcoholic liver disease is another thing, of course, caused by alcohol, but that is part of something that can be created through what alcohol does, not only to the intestine, but to the rest of us. And now that leads us into the banned foods. Banned foods. Well, if nutrition is an essential part of having good gut health, and good gut health is an integral part, like hand in hand goes good with nutrition, then if we're eating foods that are toxic, that have chemicals, like, for instance, preservatives. You ever notice this? My wife and I, Lizette, I wish you were here. We talk about, like, bread. We'll buy bread in, say, Italy when we're on a trip, and by the second day, it's hard. It's not soft anymore. Like, you really buy the bread, and you need to eat it the day it was baked, because by the next day, it's getting hard. By day 3-4, it could become moldy. Who knows? But we've gotten bread products in the U.S. that you buy, you keep on your shelf for 2-3 weeks, and they're as soft and as mold-free as they were the day you bought them because of preservatives. If they're preserving the bread by not allowing things to impact it. What happens to those chemicals when we ingest them? And these are the ones that are, quote, allowed to be put in the bread here. There are other things that are allowed to be put in bread and put into candies and put into food that are banned in other countries for various reasons. Some of them are real reasons that have real research, and others are that have suggested or possible links, but nothing proven, but enough that that country has just said, no more, we're not going to put that into our population, we're not going to put it into the diet of our people. Let's look at some of these things. Let's look at the chemical themselves and what it is. So the first one on our list is going to be brominated vegetable oil. So bromine, brominated vegetable oil. Bromine, like chlorine, common soda ingredient. It is in soda. You'll have to look on the side of the can and see if you have BVO, or brominated vegetable oil. It is a flame retardant as well, so it can be used as a flame retardant and as a soda ingredient, which helps the, I believe, the things stay, what was it there again? It helps. In soda, it helps keep things in solution. So if you have different chemicals that are in that soda, it helps keep things together. The thing that is interesting about it is that in 2014, two major brands, and they are the two that always used to go to battle years ago, you know, you'd have the taste tests. Well, those two brands said they were going to stop using it. Although they weren't allowed to use it in other countries, they said they were going to stop using it in the United States. The suggestion on this article I was reading said, check the label on the can to see if it's there or not. It has been linked to a lot of health issues. The other thing that I find interesting is, if you remember Saturday Night Live years ago, they had an advertisement for a dessert topping that was also a floor wax. And they were arguing about, it's a floor wax. No, it's a dessert topping. And when I read this one, where I heard it was a flame retardant and it was a soda additive, it brought back memories of Saturday Night Live. You know, you're thinking, oh, it's funny. Well, it's not funny. It's real. It's in our food. Next, we have RBST hormone. It's a hormone, not a harmon, but a hormone. It's added to milk. It's a hormone that is still added in the American dairy today. It has caused health problems in the cows and is still allowed in the United States, but in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and Europe, it's banned. So American milk cannot be shipped to these countries because of the hormone that's allowed to be added in the United States, given to the cow. Then we've got other things. We've got stuff like this. The yellow number 5 and number 16, mac and cheese. We all love mac and cheese, right? It's known to cause hyperactivity in children. It's banned in Norway, Finland, and a handful of other countries. And it's still used here because, oh, there's no quantitative or there's no significant proof. Like, even though there might be proof, some of the people will argue, well, there's no definite proof. And it's their artificial colors. But other countries say, hey, based upon what we see, no more. And it can cause hyperactivity in children. It's been linked to that as well. Pink slime in ground beef. And this is from many years ago. But it was I believe it was a product that was made out of old pieces of meat that were all ground together. And then they would expose this meat to ammonia to kill stuff in the meat, and then the meat would be removed, or the ammonia removed from the meat, supposedly. And ammonia is known to be unhealthy, but this is an additive that's still used to this day. It's banned in Canada and the entire European Union, and still appears in some ground beef. So you have to see if it's just 100% ground beef or if there's something else added to it. What else do we have here? Now we're going to get into a couple of other ones. Genetically modified foods like GMO, corn, soy, and papaya in the U.S. Health and safety and efficacy of GMO is up for debate. The genetically modified foods. Much of the EU, Russia, several Latin American countries, some of Asia, 4 countries in Africa have banned GMO foods. And As such, the EU has banned some American products that continue to use GMO or genetically modified products. So next, we've got chlorine-treated chicken. Just like the beef was treated with ammonia, well, now they're treating chicken with chlorine. The U.S. claims the chlorinated chicken is safe for consumption. They treat the chicken with chlorine in order to remove harmful bacteria, okay, and the EU and UK have banned it since 1997. In an effort to stop bad bacteria from getting on chicken and then being sent out into supermarkets, because we have these mega producers of chicken parts and chicken pieces and chickens, that we look at, okay, if we can't keep the place, and I'm just making this statement up, but if we can't keep the place that's processing the chicken free of bacteria, then why don't we just douse the chicken with chlorine, get the chlorine removed, and then send the chickens out because all the bacteria, the bad bacteria, are away. So we may be removing really dangerous stuff by using the chlorine, but we may be leaving something that now other countries say, nope, can't use that anymore. We've got some other stuff as well, more stuff. Ractopamine in pork. So it's used to produce more meat using less food. It makes these pigs grow so quickly that they can hardly stand, they can barely walk, they can actually injure themselves, that it's so bad in these creatures, at least other countries feel so, that they have banned, American pork is banned in 160 of 196 countries, but it's good for us. So it's banned in 160 out of 196 countries. It's the other 36 countries just don't know they don't eat pork in those countries. Who knows? But it's amazing that so many countries ban stuff that's, again, it's readily available. We buy it. When we say we buy it, it's put into the pork, the pigs, while they're growing, while they're eating, so they grow faster. They can get bigger with less food having to go to them. So saving the farmers money and getting us pork on our tables sooner and faster. The next thing we have is potassium bromate. What is that? It's in wraps, it's rolls, and it's in bread. It's an oxidizer that helps bread rise. It's been linked to kidney, thyroid cancer in rodents. It's banned in Europe, Canada, and China. Again, here we go. So not only are we using a chemical in the U.S. that has been linked to these cancers in rodents, and when you look at the study, the rodents were fed up to 2% of their diet of this chemical, which could be 1,000 times more than it would appear typically in something. So it could be a very, very, very low chance of having a problem in the quantity that we eat it, but it is shown to produce cancer in these rats. Now, there's another thing I've noticed about some of these studies. Some of these studies show cancer in rats, and it shows the cancer in the rats, but it shows it in a rate that's almost typical for that rat species. And because they can't prove that it did or didn't come from the chemical, they'll say it could be from the chemical, but they also give you like a little star note that this species of rat in the laboratory has been known to get, like, say it's 2% of those rats develop cancer over time anyway. That is a note that might be in the documentation. So now the chemical company, the food company, can argue, well, you know, it's in line with what would have happened naturally with the rats anyway, so it's okay. And then someone else will say, well, until you show me a study where it's not affecting the rats, I don't feel it's safe. There was an old study, I think it was an old Saturday Night Live, again, Joker on an old comedian said something that a laboratory study has found that rats cause cancer in laboratories, something like that, because they're always being put to test on that. We've got frozen dinners with azodicarbonamide. I won't even say it now. But in the frozen dinner, it's a leavening agent, which is used to in baked bread. But it's breads that may be in these frozen dinners. It's been linked to cancer in rodents. It's another one that's, these frozen dinners are now banned in Australia, the UK for over a decade, and most of Europe. These are frozen dinners made in the US because the bread that's in those frozen dinners is made with this leavening agent, this chemical. And it's in our food supply, banned in other countries. I'll just run through these now. Atrazine, sugarcane. There's a chemical that's sprayed on sugarcane to help kill the weeds that might be growing in the same field as the sugarcane. It is leaking into waterways. It's dangerous to the animals, the waterfowl, and the creatures that are near the waterway. It can poison that. It's linked to birth defects, reproductive tumors, skin sensitization, and muscle degeneration, and it's banned in the European Union. But, you know, we got to grow that sugar cane, we got to grow it real cheap, and we got to keep the weeds away. So it's sprayed, and when, quote, washed off, it's, you know, we're safe to use the sugar, although there might be trace amounts of this chemical still left in it. I'll run through a few real quick. Olestra, the fat-free products, you probably heard about these, cause diarrhea, gastrointestinal disease, increases appetite, which makes people fatter. By eating a fat-free product, it makes them fatter. Butylated hydroxyanisole, BHA. Let's just call it BHA. Everyone knows about that. Chewing gum, it's a preservative known to cause cancer in rats, also found in cereal. Baked goods, packaging, cosmetics, snack food, meats, butter, dehydrated potatoes, and beer. I'll get back to that in a sec, but the astaxanthin, which is a pink additive that is fed to farm-raised salmon so they can get that beautiful pink color because they're not getting it naturally. So farm-raised salmon has this chemical in it, which could cause eyesight damage. And I guess I eat a lot of salmon because my eyes have been getting worse and worse. Could be. But going back to the BHA, we always talk about people saying, oh, don't use that container in the microwave because it's got BHA and it will leach into the thing you're cooking and all that. So BHA is a known thing that people want to stay away from. It's in packaging, cosmetics, snack foods, meats, butters. It's a preservative. Again, a preservative that is known to have problems. But remember, what does a preservative do when it gets into our bacteria, when it gets into our gut? Does it stop the bacteria from being able to do what they need to do? When we come back, we've got a few more of these to go into. Before we get into, perhaps, what are some of the solutions for this? What can we do? How do we avoid these things? When we come back on 90 Day Soulmate. Today we're talking about gut health, we're talking about banned foods, and we're talking about perhaps some of the nutritional things we can do. So you've got artificial dyes in colored cereal, you've got petroleum dyes, fake blueberries that are still allowed in the U.S., linked to brain cancer, nerve cell degeneration, and hyperactivity. Artificial dyes in colored candies like M&M's, risk of hyperactivity in children, and other health risks. These are dyes, and one of the things that I found interesting was that M&M's in different countries, or candies in different countries, may have natural occurring colorants added rather than the chemicals that they're allowed to use in the United States. So in the U.S., they use these chemicals. At, you know, they're very, very colorful chemicals, so they can use very little bit of them. But in other countries where they're not allowed to use this, they have to get natural occurring colors that are available in those areas that are allowed to be used to put into the food there. So going back to all the chemicals of the dyes, we're adding dyes into food to make us want to eat them. Oh, look how colorful this is. And they're enticing us to eat something that's not as good for us because of the dye they're putting in it. Put the dye in, attract us to eat it, but we're now eating something that is not as good for us. Here's some more. Maraschino cherries, red dye number 40. Apples, chemical. filled wax shiny coating. It's filled with chemicals. It's the wax shiny coating you see on apples in the store. Chocolate milk. The emulsifying agent in chocolate milk has been not allowed in other countries. Ketchup, because of its sugar content, has not been allowed in other countries. Potato chips, the BHT that we talked about before, are in your chips to keep them fresh. It's a preservative, and you can keep your chips fresh for a long time without them going bad. Does it stop your stomach from digesting? Does it change your gut health? American cheese has the recombinant bovine growth hormone to increase milk production. It's not put in the cheese, but it's put in the cow. If the cow has it, don't we have it? I don't know. I feel like I'm growing big like a cow right now. Those are some of the things. What else do we have? We've got coffee mate, trans fats, high fructose corn syrup, palm oil, artificial sweeteners, stevia, trans fats. You know what? I think we've all heard of these things. We know they're out there, and we think we're such a progressive society that we have all these rules in place, but we also have giant companies in place who make money by doing things that last, that can stay on the shelf, that they don't have waste, and by utilizing chemicals to kill weeds, to preserve foods, to make them look pretty. They can save money, make better profit, whereas we all become laboratory rats. You know, we're just these rats that, you know, we'll find out 20 years from now this thing or that thing was bad for us. And some of these things we know now, but other things we're not going to find out till later. Finally, so let's look at the Mediterranean diet, a diet that's high in fiber, high in good oils, good lean meats, a variety of food, more natural, not preserved, not highly and super processed. Let's see what happens when... let's look at the psychological distress of a bad diet first, then we'll get into the Mediterranean diet, but let's go on to here, is that there was a study done with the psychological distress on 648 nursing students. They looked at anxiety and depression as a combination of how much time they spent in social media, 6 hours or more a week, physical activity, did they do much or not, and diet. That each of those things, screen time, physical activity, and diet, were all independently and significantly associated with depression and anxiety, meaning high screen times, low physical activity, and poor diet, all associated with anxiety and depression. Mental health benefits come from a healthy lifestyle. So, gut microbiota and human health. High fiber, unsaturated fatty acids, polyphenols, and low in saturated fats, sodium, and refined carbohydrates is the diet we're looking for. High fiber, unsaturated fatty acids, polyphenols, and low in saturated fats, sodium, and refined carbohydrates is the diet we're looking for. There are people out here or out there who know so much more about this than I do. I did my own research to try to figure out what made sense to me. That get some advice if you do your own studying or listen to somebody who's, you know, in that nutritional world. That today we are suffering from calorically dense, highly processed foods, low in fiber, high in saturated fats, a lot of salt, refined carbs. They lead to obesity, metabolic syndrome, and cardiovascular disease. They also all impact, again, low fiber, high fats, high salt, preservatives, all these things impact our gut health. The number one thing that I see on YouTube when I see things pop up and there's this doctor or that doctor, they are more and more popping up with gut health being so important. And they all want to sell you their little pills that help improve your gut health. That is something. Probiotics are good. You know, the 24 strains, 12 strains, whatever these things are that you take. Great. But if you're doing that and then you're also eating stuff that kill your bacteria, that imbalance versus, okay, I'll put good stuff in and I'll kill it. I'll put good stuff in and kill it. A healthy lifestyle and healthy dietary conditions have to work hand in hand. The gut microbiota interacts with diet and may also have an impact on health outcomes. Here's a study, 359 students. These were Greek students, in fact. They were given this thing called the International Obesity Task Force. It's a bunch of measurements that are taken, and from those measurements, they can see, has the person hit a critical point in obesity? They look at the evaluation. They evaluated the degree that that student adhered to the Mediterranean diet. They looked at the perceived health through doing a health-related quality of life assessment. And then from that, they found out that the health-related quality of life was positively impacted by the Mediterranean diet. The food's great. You got to be happy eating it. What else do we have here? We've got diet quality and nutrient density following the Mediterranean diet. I'm not going to go into what the Mediterranean diet is. Maybe the next show we'll throw it up on the screen. But this is something, study it, figure it out. This is where the blue zones come from, I think. That another study was done with 1,356 pregnant women. They calculated the energy and nutrient intake. They looked at protein, monounsaturated fatty acids, fiber, vitamins, B1, B9, C, and D, calcium, magnesium, a whole bunch of vitamins and minerals. They looked at that, counted them up, and made sure that they were above the minimum, that they were not depleted, that they were not below what was recommended. And they found that high adherence to the Mediterranean diet was associated with higher diet quality and lower proportion of inadequate micro and macronutrient intake. To put it the other way, is non-adherence to the Mediterranean diet put people at risk to not having enough micro and macro nutrients according to what was recommended? Next study. So, Mediterranean diet for cancer prevention and survivorship. Diet is a principal component of lifestyle, and most of the available evidence is centered on the Mediterranean diet as having an impact on cancer prevention and survivorship. The Mediterranean diet is inversely associated with risk or is risk neutral for most type of cancer, meaning if you are on the Mediterranean diet, the risk is lower, so it's inverse. The more adherence you have to Mediterranean diet, the lower your risk, or risk neutral. That means this, no studies have linked the two together. It's always either been the opposite or just neutral risk. The survival recurrence and short and long-term morbidity suggest a potential role for the Mediterranean diet that warrants further research. I'm going to look into it more. Hope you do as well. So, the Mediterranean diet, healthy eating attitudes and nutritional behavior in accordance with the Mediterranean diet are associated with sleep quality. So they did a sleep study where the higher the adherence to the Mediterranean diet, the more likely there was good quality of sleep. Lower cardiovascular risk scores and adherence to the MD reduced the CVR risk. So adherence to the Mediterranean diet reduced cardiovascular risk and provided optimum LDL, low density lipids, and cholesterol levels. So the Mediterranean diet helped on both fronts, lowering the risk and giving you optimum levels of your LDL. So takeaway on this whole thing here, there are other studies out there, but as a takeaway for this whole program is that the relationship between physical activity, Mediterranean diet, and emotional intelligence, that was one of the studies that were done, suggesting 300 minutes of exercise a week, which is, walking out there, jogging, running, gym, anything, just get out there, physical exercise, 300 or more, good nutrition such as the Mediterranean diet, good health, sleep, and habits, meaning healthy habits like not smoking, not drinking or not drinking to excess, and using emotional intelligence will actually help reduce stress. The number one thing that was not to be forgotten that I have starred there is that social contact with family and friends, those interactions were very important and actually associated positively with having a higher variety of fruits and vegetables in your diet. I think people who are by themselves, who don't get out, who are at home alone, have a tendency to not really have as varied of a diet because maybe they're not really thinking of it. But when you want to invite someone over for dinner or you go to their house, there's more of a, hey, let's have a bigger variety. Let's celebrate together. Let's celebrate this thing called life. Let's eat well. Let's take care of our gut. Let's emotionally, intelligently talk and communicate with each other. And hopefully we'll have better relationships as a result. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette and Jim. See you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.